Hey now, welcome to the City Off Campus podcast with your two favorite hosts, Sammy Sommerfeld and Jack McFarlane. Today, we are with Iowa Hawkeye Men's Basketball Director of Recruiting and Player Development, Courtney Eldridge. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on. Look forward to, you know, kind of sharing my story and, you know, letting guys know about the Hawkeye basketball program.
Yeah, for sure. So my first question before we dive into Hawkeye basketball, which I'm sure everybody will be excited to listen to, I want to dive into your personal basketball career, because before you were a coach and doing recruitment and development and all that stuff, you played. So when did you first start playing basketball and what was the beginning of your basketball journey?
I've been playing basketball actually since I can, you know, remember. My dad played basketball at UMass in the mid-70s. So he was like right after Dr. J.
That's cool.
He passed away in 1980 when I was 17 days old. So basketball has been kind of embedded in, you know, it's in my genes. And before I can remember walking, I remember, you know, having a basketball and dribbling a basketball. So it's something that's been near and dear to my heart, kind of kept me connected, you know, to my father. Basketball is more than just a game to me. That was one of the reasons why, you know, I've stuck with it and been able to, somewhat fulfill, you know, a lot of my dreams.
Yeah, that's great. And so one question I have for you, with you played at UNC Greensboro under current Iowa coach Fran McCaffrey. So yes. what was that recruiting process like for you? And what was it like being recruited by a younger, less experienced at the time, Fran?
Well, actually, Coach McCaffrey didn't recruit me. So I was already there. So I had just finished my freshman year and our coach got fired. And Coach McCaffrey came in on my sophomore year on. So I unfortunately didn't get recruited by Coach McCaffrey. But, being that he was my coach my last 3 years of college, my career, you know, really took off and went to a different direction. He really gave me, you know, him being a former point guard himself, he was able to, you know, give me, you know, some of the intricate details that it takes to play the position, give me the utmost confidence to go out there and play to my strengths, make mistakes. You know, I wasn't looking over my shoulder and, you know, looking at the horn, you know, waiting to be subbed out if I missed a shot or I turned the ball over. He just let me play free. And, that's one of the things that he stresses today to the guys. He wants them to, you know, play to the best of their ability and as hard as they can for as long as they can. So my college career was awesome. When I left UNC Greensboro, I was the, you know, all-time leader in steals and assists. In the top five in scoring at the time. The highlight of it being, you know, we went to the NCAA tournament in 2001. That was a dream come true. And that was, you know, one of the reasons why I went to that institution. I wanted to be part of history. I wanted to be an intricate part of the history. And, subsequently, you know, my jersey was retired, you know, at the end of my senior year. And, I left my name all over the history books at that university and, have nothing but the great times and experiences in the 4 years that I spent there.
Just to quickly go back, you said that Coach McCaffrey came in after your freshman year. What kind of message and, like, what was the tone that he kind of brought into the locker room? And how did the team receive it at first? Because that's a tough ask for any coach to come into a program with guys that he's not necessarily, you know, responsible for recruiting. Like, kind of what was that like when he came in?
To me, it was like a breath of fresh air. You know, us being both Northeast guys, you know, in North Carolina at the time, like, you know, I got him, you know what I mean? Like, you know, just his mannerisms, his vocabulary. He was, you know, truly, a godsend, you know, for our team. We came off like a 7-22 season. And, the times where it was looking really bleak. And he, you know, as you've seen him on the sidelines, you know, previously, imagine him, you know, 20 years ago. At 39, you know, vibrant and more, his passion was really contagious. And, you know, not only did you want to, you know, perform for yourself and your teammates, but you really wanted to perform for Coach McCaffrey. And, you know, our relationship was deeper than basketball, and it has, you know, stood the test of time for over, you know, 20 years now. And, you know, after I finished playing, we always stayed in contact, and, you know, I would come back and work camps, you know, whether it be at Greensboro or at Siena, or even here. I came back here, you know, 2 years in work camp before I was even, you know, hired on staff, and I was still playing. It was just, you know, the connection that and love that we had for one another that made me want to, you know, give back to him as much as I could. You know, he credits me with helping, you know, jumpstart his career, and I credit him with helping jumpstart mine. So it's we have the mutual love and respect for one another.
How have you seen Coach McCaffrey grow since those days at Greensboro to now, and especially with the different, I guess you could say it's a different basketball, but it's always the same game. Mm-hmm. How have you seen him change, if any, as a leader and as a coach?
I've seen him now be a little bit more relaxed than he has previously, in terms of, you know, letting the guys play, not micromanaging, you know, players. You know, what he sees on the sideline, you know, it's different from what the guys see, you know, in between the lines, and he gives them that respect. Like, yeah, I see this, but I want you to, you know, the play might not be what I see over here. So you go on and make the play that you deem necessary at the time. And then, you know, we'll watch film, and if we make mistakes, we'll correct it so that we won't be a habitual mistake. He gives the guys a lot more leeway, you know, now before, you know, as a young coach, you know, he wanted to leave his imprint, you know, on a lot of things. But now I see him, you know, really being more of a, I mean, I guess the term would be, you know, somewhat of a player's coach, but, you know, he's always been open to suggestions, but more so now he wants that feedback from the players and makes them feel comfortable. Hey, coach, I think we should run this because I see this, or the guy's guarding me this way. You know, I think this will work. He really is open-minded and wants suggestions from and input from his players.
So from your experience playing at a mid-major D1, where you got to go to the tournament, you went to the NIT, to now being a part of a Power 5 Division 1 program, where going to the tournament's an expected thing, or the last couple of years it's been the goal, and to achieve beyond that, how do those experiences differ from each other, from your experiences at the mid-major level to the, you know, Big Ten Power 5 level?
Yeah, you know, at the mid-major level, you know, every game counts, right? And I'm not to say that every game doesn't count at this level, but I think, well, in my personal experience, like, you know, I wanted to go out there and win every game. You know, it wasn't, you know, I know we have, you know, bye games, right? So it's, you know, some guys might feel, oh, we're playing so-and-so today, like, let's just kind of coast and go through the motions. Whereas, you know, our bye games, we were going to play Power 5 teams, right? It's like, yo, let's show these dudes that we can play at this level. And, you know, you couldn't take any game for granted. You know, you had to win your conference tournament, you know, to get to the NCAA tournament. So, you know, it was balls to the wall every single day, every possession, you know, and not saying that, you know, we tend to take possessions off, but we knew, you know, that was the only way we were going to get there. And as a captain, I kind of wanted to instill that into all, you know, my teammates. You know, I wanted to practice harder so that, you know, my backup point guard, when he got in the game, there was no drop off. You know, I wanted practices to be just as hard, if not harder, than the games for him. And I knew that, you know, we would have, you know, the team success. And I know at this level it's truly, you know, to be on this side of it is amazing. And I, you know, don't want these guys to take it, you know, a lot of the stuff for granted, because, you know, I was on the other side where, you know, we weren't flying charter, you know, we were flying commercial. You know, we didn't have training tables, you know, you ate at the cafeteria, you know, you had to get out of practice and run to the cafeteria before it closed to get your, you know, your meal. You know, we got, you know, not a knock against Papa, but Papa John's was our meal, you know, after the games, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, we didn't have the trash bags of gear that, you know, the guys get here. We didn't have the 15,000 seat stadium. So like, I want these guys to cherish this, and it can all be, you know, taken away from them, just appreciative of what they have, because not everybody has this option, and just keep the same drive and hunger, because, you know, as you progress and want to get to the next level, you know, the chances of you getting to that level are really slim.
How did playing at the mid-major level and the experiences of going to the NCAA tournament and playing, you know, higher level mid-major basketball, how did that help you entering a professional career going overseas?
So, I mean, it was really good. It helped a lot that, you know, the level that we played at, you know, the SoCon at that time, you know, had Davidson and College of Charleston and, you know, Appalachian State, teams that are not in the Southern Conference anymore, but, you know, were really good mid-major programs. You know, College of Charleston was ranked in the top 25 at the time when I was there. You know, I just missed Steph Curry by a couple of years, but Davidson had always been, you know, a really big, you know, Gonzaga of the East, so to speak, you know what I mean? And now, you know, they're in the A-10. So, you know, our conference was a great mid-major conference. So somewhat similar to kind of what, you know, Missouri Valley is now, you know, really tough teams, but it prepared me to, you know, be able to play professionally, and I could play against guys who had played at the Power Five level in college, you know, because once you get to that professional level, it doesn't matter what you were ranked or what college you went to. You know, we're all in the same country, you know, getting paid, and it's me against mano y mano, you know what I mean? So, like, your history means nothing to me, you know what I mean? And, you know, I got satisfaction from, you know, having guys say, like, damn, I hate playing against you, you know what I mean? Or getting the respect from my peers, you know, regardless of where they went to school. But, you know, my college experience prepared me for that, you know. Again, we were, you know, one of the best teams in the conference, and being able to win the championship. And like you said, the year after my senior year, going to the NIT. So, you know, playing against, you know, the Memphis team and DeJuan Wagner. So, like, we played high level basketball on a consistent basis, and it prepared me for life, you know, after college.
Yeah. Before I dive into your overseas career a little more, I wanted to ask you, what was that NCAA tournament experience like for you?
Yeah, it was a dream come true. Just, you know, the whole, you know, I think now, you know, when, you know, you're in at Iowa, right? For the most part, you know, we just, okay, where are we going? Who are we playing against? Mm-hmm. That excitement, it kind of, it's not as much as it was, exciting, you know, that year, you know, after winning the tournament, we're like, okay, we know we're in, but where are we going? Who are we playing? You know what I mean? And just that experience was, it's one of the top, you know, greatest moments of my life. Just, you know, unfortunately we were 16 seed and we got to play the number one overall seed in Stanford Cardinal with the Collins twins and Casey Jacobson. And, you know, they were a really good team. I think they were, might've been the number one, you know, team at the time, but just having that, and went out and played in San Diego, you know, at the Aztec Stadium, and just going out there, and it was a dream come true, man. And, you know, we hung with them for the, like, you know, the first 25, 30 minutes of the game. And then they, you know, the Collins Center just kind of wore us down. You know, we had the size, you know, our starting five could really compete and play, you know, everybody played professionally, you know, after college, and we could compete. It was just, you know, as we went down the line, the bench, that you kind of saw the separation.
Yeah. Not having enough depth. Mm-hmm. So with your professional career, I know you've played in multiple countries, from Brazil, Poland, Italy, Turkey, Dominican mm-hmm. Republic, and a few others. What were some of the highlights, and what were some of your favorite countries to play in, and what were the moments of struggle playing overseas?
Okay, my first overseas experience was in Brazil, and that was, you know, one of my favorites, just because of the weather. You know, the seasons are opposite, so I would leave, you know, Boston in August, where it was, you know, summer, fall, and go down to Brazil when it was spring, about to be summer. So, like, having four seasons of good weather was really awesome. And being down in Brazil in December, and it's, you know, 90 degrees, being on the beaches and, you know, Rio and São Paulo, the food, and it was really high level basketball. played against like Marcelino Huertas when he was, you know, a young, 18-year-old. So Brazil ranks as one of my favorite places to play. The food was unbelievable. It was kind of like America, where you have, you know, different people from all walks of life. They had people that look like me, people that look like you, you know, so different nationalities where, you know, I didn't seem, you know, somewhat out of place, whereas some of the other countries I was, you know, I stuck out kind of like a sore thumb. Italy was an awesome experience. I was like 30 minutes outside of Rome. So again, you know, the food was awesome, you know, just learning, you know, the history. And, you know, it got to the point where I would ride by the Colosseum, you know, a couple times a week. And it was okay. The first few times, like, oh, there's the Colosseum or there's the Vatican. And then, you know, after a few months, it was like, you know, you wouldn't even, you know, look twice, you know, over there, but just learning, you know, the rich history of there. And there was a lot of tourists, you know, coming in. So you would meet a lot of people and, you know, form some lifelong relationships with people from, you know, different countries. And, you know, it also made me appreciate being an American. I think it's something that we take for granted, not knowing how it is in, you know, other people's struggles. The population in Brazil was so bad, like if your license ends in a certain number, you can't drive on certain days. You know, I lived in Belarus, Minsk, Belarus, and, you know, communist Russia, you know, USSR, and, you know, you had to get permission, you know, back in the day, not modern day, but you had to get permission, you know, from the government to buy certain things from the, you know, the grocery store. There's just certain things that, you know, we take for granted, you know, other people really struggle with. And, you know, one of the low points, I was like, just experienced, you know, racism, you know, in different countries, you know, being told that I couldn't enter, you know,
wow. You
know, an establishment or whatever because of the color of my skin. Like, I couldn't imagine, you know, what my ancestors went through in, you know, the 50s and the 60s here in America. And, you know, here it was 2012 at the time, you know, I was told that I couldn't, you know, enter, you know, a building because, you know, the color of my skin, which is, you know, it was heartbreaking. And I couldn't imagine, you know, living through times like that. But, you know, overall, had some really good experiences in some really good countries, great countries. Learned to, you know, respect, you know, people of all walks of life and religions, and, you know, learned a few languages at the time. Don't know them anymore, but, you know, had to learn, you know, different languages to, you know, just order, you know, a simple meal or communicate, you know, somewhat with my teammates. But just, you know, basketball, you know, was our common language. And, you know, again, have friends, you know, from all over the world, you know, who I'll continue to talk to for as, you know, as long as we live.
So you've been to, I mean, half a dozen countries, let's say, and play professional basketball in those countries. Are there any venues or specific settings or a game that stick out where you go, man, like, they really care about basketball here more so than I would have ever expected?
Mm-hmm. Where? So, you know, one year I was on a team in Poland and we were like the Polish champions. And so we played in the EuroLeague, and you know, the EuroLeague for arguably is the second best league in the world, right? So, you know, playing in, you know, against Tau, Ceramica, you know, when they had Tiago Splitter, and you know, playing against Partizan, Jan Vesely, and just the atmosphere in Partizan in Serbia, Belgrade, that was one of the most electric venues I've ever been in, as an opposing, you know, team member. You know, they've lighting flares and, you know, jumping up and down and singing and raising flags and, you know, throwing things on the court. If it, you know, we sat with a barricade, you know, a plastic barricade with kind of a loop over, so like, you know, they can't throw anything on you. But man, the fans are so passionate about, you know, sports. And I know, you know, obviously soccer is the most popular sport over in Europe, but if, you know, haven't seen a soccer game, you know, or the fans on TV, you know, it's basketball is just as passionate in, you know, in an enclosed space. But like, you know, they have their songs, you know, they, jumping up and down. It's electric. It's an experience that I hope a lot of guys get to experience. It's breathtaking. It's something that honestly you remember for the rest of your life. But again, like being over in Europe and playing against, you know, some of these guys, you know, while they were a little bit younger and, you know, while they get to the NBA, just seeing that, you know, their progress and following their progression is something that I truly enjoyed.
So at what point during your career did you make that decision? You're like, all right, I'm done dribbling the basketball. I want to help coach. I want to be behind the scenes. And what inspired you to make that change?
So in all honesty, it was the birth of my 8-year-old twins now. So at the time I was in Turkey when they were born. So my wife, was kind of just going to get a routine checkup. She was at work and I have twin boy girl, twins, Jordan and Aaliyah. And the girl twin was taking more of the nutrients than the boy twin. So they had to take them out then that day. I had spoke to the team in the preseason, like, hey, my wife is pregnant. Like, I'll be having to go home at some point in time. But it was a Thursday. We had a game on a Saturday, so they wouldn't let me leave. So I couldn't go home till Sunday after the game. I was home from a Sunday to Thursday, so saw the kids in the hospital for a few days. And then I had to go back to Turkey to finish the season. Came back in June. And I went to the Dominican Republic in July. So I was home for a month, left, came back in September. Wanted to spend some time at home. Normally, you're going back to Europe. So I waited till at least Christmas to stick around and spend some time with the kids. Left right after Christmas to go back to Poland. So I was in Poland again from, you know, January to May. And that was the first time those 5 months that I got homesick in my whole career. And that let me know that it was time. I was 34, 35 at the time. Oh, wow. So, still, physically able to perform and play. But, you know, just being homesick for the first time let me know that it was time. And also, you know, I knew, you know, my time was running down, but it was, you know, just time to be home full time and focus on, you know, what was next. And I was fortunate enough to, you know, coach high school at the beginning. I refereed, you know, AAU stuff just to, you know, stay involved in the game. And, that was the year Iowa played in Brooklyn in an NCAA tournament. And, you know, that was a 4-hour drive for me. Called coach. He's like, coach, you know, you guys are playing, you know, Temple on Friday. You know, like, I come up to the game. So, you know, I came up to the game, sat in the pregame meals and, you know, stuff like that, and just kind of absorbed, you know, what life on, you know, this side was like. You know, went to the game, it was an exciting game. You know, they won, went back to the hotel with the team and, you know, had the post game meal and started watching, you know, film on Villanova with coach and the coaching staff. Drove back home to Boston that Friday night after the game, came back up Sunday for the Villanova game, kind of the same, process. And, you know, after that game, you know, coach said, well, why don't you come down to Houston to the Final Four with us? You know, I introduce you to some people and, you know, kind of see what's what. So, buy my flight down to Houston and with, you know, Coach McCaffrey, and we're going to, you know, Dick Vitale parties and, you know, sitting with him in the lobby and just watching the Final Four games, and he's introducing me to people. And then like 2 weeks later, I think Coach Billy Taylor at the time was the director of basketball operations. And, that's when he got the head coaching job at Belmont Abbey. And there was an opening in the staff, and Coach McCaffrey called me and said, see, I got an opening on staff as a video coordinator. Is that something you'd be interested in? And, that was an absolute no-brainer. And I guess kind of the rest is history. So 2016, June of 2016, I became the video coordinator here at the University of Iowa, and it was probably one of the best positions that I could get. And I was, you know, very thankful, and it was a skill that I've learned and I'm very grateful to have learned it, and it will certainly help me set me up for the rest of my career in this profession.
I wanted to take it back real quick. You said you were a ref for a couple AAU games.
Mm-hmm.
Did you enjoy that a lot, or did you feel like the heckling in the background from the parents thinking their kid's going to be an NBA all-star was a little like, come on, like let's wake up and smell the coffee. Was there a lot of that?
It was a lot. I definitely enjoyed it. It was fun. Just being as a basketball player, seeing, you know, that side, you know, of the game, you know, just learning things that I didn't know as a player, you know, the intricate rules and details you got to pay attention to as a referee. But, you know, I think one knock on me, I kind of refereed like I played. It's like, oh man, that ain't no foul. Don't be looking at me for a foul. That was no foul. You got to go stronger to the basket than that. But, you know, refereeing, you know, and I don't want to sound sexist or anything, but refereeing, you know, girls basketball was harder. You know, I would have parents, you know, on me like, oh, that's a foul. Look, you know, and, you know, young girls at the time, you know, they were kind of falling down with, you know, incidental or no contact at all. And it kind of looks like a foul from where some people are standing, but right on top of the play, you know, there was no foul. So parents would get on me, you know, definitely, you know, young first, second, third grade girls basketball was hard to referee for sure, but I really enjoyed it. And you know, you kind of tune them out. So I give the referees that we have a little bit more respect. It's a hard job.
How did you go from, you know, being a player under Coach McCaffrey to being a peer and colleague on his staff with Coach McCaffrey? How did that relationship evolve and change? And was that a weird transition for you?
Yeah, it definitely was a weird transition for me. You know, I always, you know, referred to him, you know, as coach. And, you know, it took me a while to want to add my input on certain things. Whereas not that, you know, the coach is always right because he wants input, but, you know, I was kind of reluctant to kind of overstep my boundaries and kind of wanted to stay in my lane and just kind of observe and learn and not, you know, say anything that was going to upset him or say anything wrong. But, you know, he really encouraged me to do so. Like, he wants my input, you know, because I see things differently. You know, we all see things differently, and some things that I saw as a player, he wants me to see, you know, and add that, to kind of, you know, in the relatability to I have with our guys now, you know, he wants, you know, see how can we help the guys do X, Y, and Z, or I can come back to him and say, hey coach, like this might not be working for these guys. Let's try, you know, this way. And, so that dynamic took a little time to develop, but now, you know, I'm 5 years in and I have no issues, you know, with adding my input, and he really looks to me for that.
Yeah. And one thing I wanted to ask you about, especially with your role now as director of recruiting player development, I kind of want to break that up a little bit. My recruiting question for you is, you know, recruitment now in college basketball is almost like an entire sports news industry in itself, where everybody's following the high school recruits, everybody's following every reporter who has news on everything. How do you as a staff or you individually kind of go about building relationships with recruits? And how do you kind of, you know, sift the ones who you know are kind of, you know, there's the mutual interest, and who are the ones where you guys might kind of push for? How do you go about in that relationship process and in the scouting process?
Okay. Like we've done, I think, a really good job of identifying talent early. And that helps in this process. You know, I can't speak on anybody, you know, specifically, but, you know, we've been able to, you know, identify kids as, you know, rising sophomores or, you know, rising juniors who, you know, if they continue on that trajectory, will be, you know, Power Five level players. And so we've been able to, you know, kind of get in there before, you know, other Power Five teams, and, you know, get to their high school or, you know, watch them play and bring them on campus. So there's, you know, some mutual loyalty somewhat, so to speak, right? So-and-so, you know, Iowa has seen me, you know, they've been calling me for 2.5 years, like, and, you know, they've been historically successful like, this is a place that I could see myself. You know, Coach McCaffrey does a really good job of being personable with, you know, the parents and the players. I think that's one of his best attributes as a coach. You know, being a Philly guy, he could, you know, talk to kids from, you know, all over, you know, the country, and, you know, feel comfortable talking with, you know, people from all walks of life. And, you know, truly that's one of the greatest qualities, you know, that he has. Again, he's, you know, 60, you know, year old, you know, white guy from Philadelphia, but he can hold a conversation and relate to, you know, kids that are, you know, 15, 16, 17 years old from all across the country. And not a lot of guys can do that. And, you know, he's been able to, again, really identify kids, you know, early and stay in there. And obviously, you know, there are times where, you know, the kid that he's on the trajectory and he continues to go where we think he's going to go. And, you know, other guys, you know, come in kind of lately and are able to, you know, the blue bloods come in and, you know, other Power Five teams and kind of lose out on them. But I think we're going to continue to identify, you know, kids early and, you know, bring in guys that fit with our program and our style. Also, you know, coach is really big on who he recruits. It's, you know, it's not just, you know, their basketball talent. You know, they have to be able to fit in with our culture and our program and in this environment. And nowadays, you know, one bad recruit can take down a whole coaching, you know, staff and university. And, you know, he feels comfortable at night with his head on a pillow, knowing who he has in his program. And it's up to us as, you know, his staff to, you know, kind of find those kids and weed out the kids that, you know, won't be successful here.
Yeah, and I think that's very evident when you look at the roster, when you look at the coaching staff too. It just seems like everybody fits the program. I mean, all the Iowa fans see the players always pumping each other's social media posts up on mm-hmm. each other's social medias, and they're always together and everything like that. And it seems like everybody wants to be there, which, you know, is very rare to see, I think, in college basketball, where, you know, it can be a very me type of thing with some mm-hmm. of these top guys. But yeah. The other key thing I wanted to ask you about is player development, which I think Iowa basketball and Iowa football now are kind of like, you know, they're very correlated, where both programs really develop guys and pride themselves on the developmental process. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of wanted to ask you about, like, you know, what the developments of guys like Wieskamp, Garza, who have come through in the past, Jordan Bohannon, all these other guys, you know, Keegan Murray, Patrick McCaffrey, all the guys who are in the program mm-hmm. now. What's kind of the developmental process from, you know, they sign to commit to Iowa and you kind of are putting a plan together when they come in as freshmen in the summer. Mm-hmm. And then how does that carry out into, you know, when they start seeing minutes and seeing time on the court? Like, how do you continue to build and build year in and year out to make them better mm-hmm. players?
And I would say, you know, first and foremost is the commitment from the player, because we can have the plan in place, but if, you know, these guys aren't showing up every day or getting in the gym on their own time, it's going to all go for naught. So, you know, those guys' willingness to be in here and want to get better plays a major part in it too. And that's part of the recruiting process, right? We want to recruit guys who are going to be in here. You know, we have the fingerprint, you know, technology, so like they can get in here at all hours of the day. You know, we don't want guys who are going to spend most of their time, you know, downtown, yeah. you know, hanging out. Now, we want them to enjoy their college life by all means, but, you know, we don't want that to be, you know, why they're here or the highlight of their 4 years here. You know, ultimately we want to get, you know, we have a wall here with some of our NBA guys, and our, you know, when guys walk through here, we tell them we want your picture, you know, on this wall. And, you know, that's the mindset, and it's contagious, right? We want an atmosphere like that. But to answer your question, you know, nowadays it's a little easier because, you know, they come in here in June of after their senior year. Whereas before you come in September or August and, you know, you're kind of behind the eight ball, you know, the freshmen, so to speak. But, you know, they're able to come in June now and, you know, go to summer school and get acclimated to, you know, what college life is like, you know, taking classes and, you know, where you have, you know, 8 hours a week where we're, you know, able to physically, you know, be able to do things with them and, you know, to get the lifting part down. We have a nutritionist and, you know, our strength and conditioning coach who, you know, individualizes plans for each player. Okay. You know, Keegan, this is a good weight for you. This isn't a good weight. We got to take it off. We got to put some more, like whatever it is, it's, you know, it's catered to the each individual. So, you know, we have an 8 week session in the summer, you know, they go home for 2-3 weeks. And then we're back in the fall. And now we're, you know, doing preseason stuff and it's, you know, skill development. It's, you know, guys coming in, you know, on their own, you know, before or after, you know, whatever it is. And then, cause you know, once we get into the season, you know, we're practices, you know, individual stuff is kind of slimmed down a little bit as we're preparing and scouting, you know, teams as we get into games and we're not practicing as hard or as long, we're not lifting as much. So, you know, a lot of it is getting stronger in the summer and the preseason so that, you know, once we get to January, you know, you're not, you know, breaking down or wearing down. That's kind of the peak, right? We've got to keep going because we're preparing for March then. And then, you know, the season, you know, kind of goes by and then it's postseason. And that's another really important part of the player development side of it. Like, okay, you assess how you did during the season and some of the things you need to work on, you know, individually to collectively, you know, move the needle for the team. So then, you know, we do have, you know, skill development groups, you know, with guards or bigs and centers or, you know, we break it up like that. So you're working on, you know, just the different aspects of your game where you need to improve. But again, a lot of it is, you know, the guy's willingness to want to be in here and get better and want to, you know, hear their name called, you know, by the commissioner of the NBA. And we were fortunate to have two guys do that, you know, this year. And it's testament to who they are. You know, Luka was every single day for 4 years, this dude brought, you know, the same level of intensity. It didn't matter if he was going up against, you know, Tyler Cook or Michael Bear, you know, like he brought the same level of intensity every single day for 4 years. And to really see, you know, him get rewarded for his hard work is really gratifying because, you know, a lot of kids, you know, think it comes easy and it did not for him. And to see the work he put in, you know, night in and night out is really amazing. And I hope, you know, other guys, you know, saw that really the hard work paid off. And for Weezy, you know, again, he was one of the guys that, hey, we'll see, can we work out in the morning? Like, you know, we call it the breakfast club. You know, he would come in and, you know, 8:30, 9 o'clock, you know, before class, you know what I mean? And want to, you know, work on, you know, pull up shots, one, two, you know, stuff that he needed to personally in his game. You know, we all know that he could shoot the basketball, but he wanted to work on ball handling. He wanted to work on his mid-range game. He wanted to work on his post-up game. Just, you know, just the other aspects of his game where he wasn't getting, you know, the individual attention, you know, in practices or for whatever reason. But, you know, those two guys, you know, stood out to me that, you know, they knew what they wanted and wouldn't be satisfied. You know, even like Tyler Cook, like his development, like we helped, you know, now he's a small ball five man in the NBA, but his ability to dribble the basketball and make plays for other people is kind of what helped him get there. And, you know, that was something Coach Matt, you know, when he recruited, told him that, you know, him playing with Jason Tatum in high school in AAU, you know, Jason Tatum had the ball all the time. Tyler, you go down there and you post and you dunk it or you get it off the rebound and you lay it in. Like that was, you know, kind of his game back then, right? Well, Tyler, if you come here, we're going to give you the ball. We're going to let you rebound it. We're going to let you push it and make plays for other people. And his freshman year, did he make some mistakes? Yes. But at the same time, he wouldn't have been the player who he was his sophomore and junior year if, you know, coach didn't give him the confidence or the leadway to make those mistakes and learn from them. Now he's going to be, you know, a small ball NBA center, which has a skill set that, you know, that they're looking for nowadays. Again, there's a lot of film study too. You know, coach was really big on film, you know, when I was playing and back then, you know, you had to have the two VHS tapes. Like, so you had to record over something to record something. And, you know, it was a really long, tough process, but, you know, we watched practice every day of the previous day's practice. And, I think that was really something that, you know, kind of was innovative back then, and something that helped me, you know, kind of visualize and see it. Well, Coach, I didn't do that yesterday. You know what I mean? Like, the film doesn't lie. And, you know, that's something that we do here. Obviously, technology has evolved, and, you know, our guys have their own iPads with, you know, the practice from the day before it gets uploaded up to it, you know, probably 30 minutes after the practice is over, so they can watch it themselves and kind of assess what they did right or did wrong. And, you know, we'll break it down as a staff. We clip it up, and then we watch, you know, our clips before practice, you know, the next day, say, oh, you know, just to clean some things up or to exemplify, you know, somebody doing something right. But the film is a big part of player development as well.
Yeah. One thing that's really interesting. And one thing I wanted to ask you is, you know, you talked about Luka's season, Lee's camp last year, a little bit, what they were doing to get better. What was, I'm going to call that bubble season, like for you as a coach and experiencing it? What were some of the highlights from it? And what were some of the moments where you're like, this is just bizarre, as somebody who played pro, you know, never had to play with no fans and all this stuff? What was that like for you? Yeah. And how did you, as one of the coaches on staff, keep the morale up for the players?
Yeah, it was difficult at first, you know, in all honesty. You know, these guys are used to playing in front of a packed house. You know, that's what they signed up for when they come here and want to play in the Big Ten. But, you know, one of the main, you know, our main goal was to get to March and to, you know, to play in the NCAA tournament. So I think that was kind of what kept guys focused on, you know, okay, we got to go out there and take care of business, because it's just another stepping stone to where we need to get to. But it was really difficult, and it was, you know, amazing that guys were able to stay, you know, focused and locked in, where sometimes, you know, that was a tough atmosphere to play in. You know, we would have more noise at practice than you would have at games, you know, for, you know, the built-in crowd noise. Just had it was like a little, you know, all over, you know, the court, really did nothing. And, you know, just to have, you know, the guys, you know, getting, you know, COVID tested, and, you know, they couldn't really have the college experience, you know, kind of be isolated. And, you know, we really were concerned about their mental health. You know, the way that they were able to perform and sustain it and kind of, you know, be locked in and locked down and couldn't go out to get something to eat, or you couldn't really hang out with, you know, your girlfriend, or, you know, cause you don't know who she was around, and, you know, getting COVID tested, you know, multiple times, you know, a week to daily to, it was a lot to ask for these kids, and hopefully, you know, we'll get to a point where, you know, we won't have to, you know, live through this anymore. But you know, what they were able to accomplish last year, you know, I don't want to go kind of unnoticed. It was truly, you know, undescribable, you know, for someone who didn't go through it. And testament to these kids' character, and, you know, they wanted to do it for each other. And, you know, that was one of the things you talked about, you know, like the selflessness that they have. You know, we led the NCAA in assists. You know what I mean? Like, now, granted, the big fella was a lot of recipient of, you know, some of those assists, but, you know, the guys really wanted to share the ball. And when you have, you know, guys like that, again, it becomes contagious, and you don't want to just do it for yourself. And I think that's when you have really good teams. You want to do it for each other. And, you know, that's a really important quality.
Yeah, definitely. And before Jack wraps with his final question, I have one more question for you that I'd love to ask you, which is, now going into this season where fans hopefully will be back in Carver. As of now, they're going to be back in Carver, which I'm excited for. I'm ready to come to a game again. You know, this team's going to look different with some of the younger pieces being main focal points. Obviously, people have talked about Keegan. I'm, you know, Pat's going to be a main guy. Joe's stepping up as, you know, point guard now. Jabo's moving over to shooting guard, and all these other, you know, Felper Brach is coming in to step in a little bit for Luka and all these pieces. How has it been like now to basically reconfigure the team in different ways after playing with Luka as the focal point these last 2 years with shooters around him? It was kind of, you know, just kind of set. Everybody kind of knew what their roles were, and now some of these roles are shifting. What's that kind of been like, and what has it been like prepping for this upcoming season? What are you looking forward to and all of that?
It's very exciting. Like you said, guys are going to be, you know, in new roles, and the roles aren't defined. And, you know, that's, again, that's what the opportunity comes in. And that's why the guys signed up to come here. You want to play the highest level against the highest level competition and kind of measure where you're at. And, again, there's nothing like, okay, we knew the big fella was going to get with his points and Wheezy was going to get his 15. And now, you know, those two guys are gone and it's time for somebody to step up. And that's what this is. The game is all about is evolving, and you know, guys are going to have opportunities to step up and be major players on this team. And that's the excitement of it. You know, don't know who it is, and it can be, you know, different people on different nights. But I think, you know, as these guys, you know, they prepared, you know, all summer for this. I'm excited to see, you know, what Tony Perkins does with, you know, extended minutes, and Aaron Ulis, you know, you really didn't get to see those guys, you know, play very much last year. And they've had a great, you know, summer and fall thus far. You know, Joe Toussaint is going to have, you know, more responsibility now, and, you know, just seeing his game, you know, evolve and grow over the time. And it's going to continue to grow. You know, Keegan and Chris, you know, they're, you know, going to be important pieces, you know, for us this year. And, you know, they're stepping into to more leadership roles. And, you know, P-Mac is a bucket. P-Mac is going to go out there and shoot threes and run the floor and dunk and get offensive rebounds. And, you know, again, you know, I remember Patrick before Patrick was a bait, you know, born. He was running around Greensboro with capes on, you know what I mean? Like, but just seeing, you know, him grow and to who he is now, it's been, you know, truly awesome to see. You know Connor's, you know, the OG on the team and one of, you know, the vocal leaders, and having Bo out there is always a calming presence, because you know he's been in the big games and it's makes big shots, and you know, guys are going to look, you know, to him to kind of, you know, be that guy, you know, when, you know, things are gonna, they aren't gonna go you know, as planned all the time. You know what I mean? But, you know, he's been one consistent, you know, over the last 5 years. You know, he's going to be a really common presence, you know, for the guys to look to. And, you know, his voice is going to be very important, you know, for the guys.
I call him the coach on the floor. That's what I call Connor. He's the coach on the floor. He's, you know, Fran in a jersey.
He truly is. And, you know, that's not something that, I think the everyday fan, you know, values, but you need that, you know, guy who knows where people are going to be or tells people, you know, where they're going to be or where they go. And, you know, as being a point guard, like, you know, that the pass has to be on at the right time and in the right spot. You know what I mean? And, you know, the guy who that shoots it kind of gets all the credit, but, you know, even the hockey assist, like just knowing, you know, who needs the ball where, and just be that voice, like you said, in the locker room or in that huddle, is really reassuring. And I'm glad, you know, we have, you know, J-Bo and Connor, you know, kind of there in the backcourt to be those voices.
And is it fair to say we're going to be playing pretty fast this year? We're going to be
running up the floor. We're going to do a lot of things. We have more, you know, flexibility to do a lot of things different defensively too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, before, you know, ball screen action with the big fella, we had the flat shadow, right? But now we can be a little bit more aggressive. We can trap ball screens. You know, we're going to do press a little bit more. You know, we have the length and the athleticism, you know, all over the floor to really, you know, be aggressive and do things differently than we have in the past.
And to kind of wrap it up, this episode is going to be coming out tomorrow, Friday, day before the Iowa State Cyhawk game. Mm-hmm. Just wanted to quickly touch, stepping into Iowa, did you have much of any knowledge of like what the Cyhawk game meant to the people in the state of Iowa? Okay, so he's nodding no for everyone who can't see.
I did not.
And then it's just to double on that, what is it like truly like from a third party perspective from your own where you're stepping into this? What is it like being in the middle of the rivalry?
So like just the whole, you know, fandom, right? From the Hawkeye fans is nothing I've ever experienced, you know, in my life in moving here. You know, I remember the first, you know, kind of football weekend, you know, my first year and, you know, the parking lot's closing, you know, I see people standing out there. I'm like, dang, the game's not until tomorrow. But I see like, you know, RVs and stuff kind of pulling in and people start tailgating. I'm like, you know, game's not for another 18 hours. Like, ooh, what's going on here? And then, you know, getting in Kinnick and experiencing that, like, it's truly, you know, Iowa is special and the fans are special and they make this experience really worthwhile. And to answer your question, you know, the rivalry, you know, I'm a, you know, being a Boston guy. So, you know, I hate the Lakers. I hate the Yankees. You know, I hate the Colts. I hate the Giants. So, you know, big Patriot, Celtics, Red Sox, man. So it's, I would, something that, you know, I kind of make it equivalent to the Red Sox Yankees rivalry, right? It is truly great for the state, and you know, having been a part of, you know, a few Cyhawk games, and you know, just the atmosphere and the I guess the hatred for one another is truly you know, kind of one of a kind, and I'm grateful to be a part of it and grateful to be on the Hawkeye side. You know, going, you know, I have a friend actually from back home, Will Blaylock, who was a point guard for, you know, Iowa State back in the early 2000s, him and, you know, Curtis Stinson. And so, you know, him and I, you know, I talked to him yesterday and told him, hey, you know, big game coming up this weekend. Now, you know, granted, we talk more about basketball, but, you know, the football is just as exciting. And I'm looking forward to Saturday's game with, you know, two top 10 ranked teams. And, you know, hopefully the Hawkeyes come out on top there again this year. You know, it's really difficult though, but like, so every year that we have it, you know, we're both either on the road or at home, and it makes it, you know, kind of difficult, right? To go, you know, on the road, both, you know, both teams and to play on the road. But I guess it's equally as fun to have it both home games next year. So hopefully we can both, you know, go out there and aims and get some W's.
Yeah, and I figured that was the perfect question to end this on, because I don't think – no, seriously, I don't think there is any rivalry or game that the Hawkeyes take part in that carries this much emotion and passion from the players and the fans alike. Like, it's it's truly, like you said, it's nothing like you'll ever know until you really experience it. And
yeah,
I've lived in the state since I was 6. And I told everybody once I moved back to Illinois, I said, this rivalry is truly like nothing you have any idea. You got to be there to feel it and really know what it's about. This game, this weekend's going to be absolutely amazing. And every basketball game between the two from the future now, I mean, there's a lot of bad blood. Iowa State's been on the short end of the stick for a long time, and I'm pretty sure it's going to stay that way. So, you know, it's really exciting to be on this, you know, the right side of history. But, Courtney, we cannot thank you enough for taking the time today, hopping on the pod. Like always, guys, not the same time, same place. We will see you guys later.